Well, I did run a paper copy, but I know you still can't read.
I need LASIK.
I can't read it. Somebody tell me what I can't read.
Of that schedule on allocation of state appropriations. And then you've also got a separate piece in there, which is two PowerPoint slides that Edwardsville had asked to have submitted for this discussion today. And again, just to reiterate what the chair shared, you know, you're not doing any decision-making today. This isn't about coming up with, you know, a definitive plan or anything else, but it is about getting a discussion started. And that's what we'll do and see where we go from this point. Provost Cobb is also going to get a chance to weigh in with a couple of comments here in a minute or three as I set this up. But I'm trying to condense the setup. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say that this issue got pushed to the fore during the period of time where we had to look at sub-budgets and borrow from the Edwardsville sub-budget to keep Carbondale operations going as we hit the apex of the budget crisis not quite a year ago. And the nature of that action and some of the discussion that took place around it, which for those of you who were watching as employees, students, certainly members of the board at that time, was fairly direct and intense at that time. Obviously, the loan of monies did take place by action of the board. But it opened up a larger conversation about the allocation of the state appropriations to Carbondale versus Edwardsville. Historically, the allocation, and this again is traditional, there's nothing that demands it in law, policy, or anything else, the historic approach to splitting the allocation on the state side had been 60% to SIU, inclusive of the School of Medicine, and 40% to Edwardsville. As we've seen, the growth of the Edwardsville campus that's been significant. Obviously, Denise, one of our brag points yesterday on Edwardsville being its long consecutive string of being the fastest growing public in Illinois, along with the expansion of that mission, particularly around graduate education, to that point, moving into doctoral education, seemed to augur for reopening the discussion about the allocation. So from that point, I've been engaged in some, so you know, we're going back now six to 8 months this academic year. Had been in discussions with the Edwardsville campus. I'd been asked to be present, talk to various constituency bodies up there, give some of the history and background on this, talk about how it came to be, what the rationale for it was, et cetera. And again, as you can well imagine, there was clear emphasis on the fact that the Edwardsville constituencies, however you wish to define that, not just their standing constituency bodies, but other groups, individuals, even you know, up through and including senior administration on the campus, I think it's fair to say, have asked for this to at least be peeled back, looked at, and considered going forward. So what I'd indicated to the Edwardsville campus was at what point, what I pledged to them was at what point the board came together and we retreat, we would start that discussion. I would advance that to the chair. To begin nascent conversations, exploratory discussions, see where that might go over time, and that's how it has come to you today. If I know it's difficult to read, but what we've tried to do in this chart is look at the allocations, and again, we're talking state appropriations only, look at the allocations that have gone to Carbondale School of Medicine and Edwardsville. And I know it's tough to read, but if you can just really focus on that bottom summary box, you can see that we've moved well away from the 60-40 split over the years. And those numbers speak for themselves. in what you're going to see from Edwardsville, which Denise, I'm teeing you up here, and what you see from Edwardsville, they wanted to just be able to share information. If you look at enrollment only, and this is kind of their cut to give a scenario for the board that might suggest how this would change if you just drove this on the basis of enrollment solely, weighted enrollment. And I think, Denise, you may speak to this, but I think they may have used, you all may have used a 1 for undergraduate, 1.2 masters, 1.4 doctoral,
yes.
And have a formula that is driven by enrollment only. Maybe at this point, Denise, you share any thoughts, some of the thinking of the campus. Again, I know Chancellor Pembroke is regretful that he's not here today to be able to do this with you. But it clearly has something that's had a lot of discussion at the Edwardsville campus, and it's time for the board to be willing to look at this and see where we go. Denise, maybe some thoughts, and then I'll tee up a couple of last, or share a couple of last ideas and go from there.
Sure. The president mentioned that when he's been on campus, this has been a common part of conversation. At the most recent visit he made to our faculty senate, I would say the vast majority of questions were about the allocation model. I think faculty, staff, students, administrators on our campus understand this as a legacy distribution. And we're asking the board to reconsider the allocation model because we believe it's important to the system and to our campus, and not just for symbolic reasons. There are symbolic reasons. I think we'd like to be viewed as a full partner in this system and as a contributor to this system in a way that is reflected in an allocation model. I think we understand that it can't happen immediately, but we'd like to see movement. So we've grown. We're not the same campus we were at the beginning 50 years ago. We're not the same campus we were 20 years ago. And we'd like for the allocation model to show that. So I think it's both symbolic and structural. I'd also say that we think it's about the system thriving, not just surviving. And it's about our campus being able to do new things. I'm an organizational sociologist by training, so I think about things both on a cultural and climate level for organizations, but I also think about structural issues. And I think about how difficult organizational change is. And it's difficult at a system level, it's difficult at a campus level, but I see this as a necessary part of our growth as a system and our growth as a campus. If we hope to do all the things that we imagine as a campus, if we really want to move forward, we need you to reconsider the allocation model. Inertia is a common tendency for organizations. If we want to have return on investment, if we want to grow and thrive, if we'd like to move with agility, Edwardsville's at a point. We produce a credit hour more efficiently than any Illinois public and have a long history of doing so. The budget crisis that we've had has had real implications on our campus, just as it has on Carbondale. We're thin, we're lean. We were lean before we did the structural adjustment on our campus and the realignment. We're very lean now. If we want to do new things, we need the ability to do so. And we have departments that have grown and they did so with the belief that resources would follow, but we're pretty locked in. So we're trying to invest where we can. We're trying to do new things. We're trying to meet the needs of our stakeholders, and both on campus and in our communities, but we need your help to do that. And I'm happy to walk you through the numbers, but either way, I think you can see if you just look at headcount, it suggests there needs to be a reallocation. We understand that our universities have different missions, different orientations to research, different orientations to graduate education. Because of that, we still offered a model where we weighted students' headcount differently. In either model, it suggests that this is the time to revisit this issue.
And I'd like to point out a couple things that were mentioned from the representatives. There were some themes, there were some common themes, and it was more than one representative. And don't shoot the messenger. One representative said, and I believe, and I don't know who his name was, but his comment was, you know, in the system model, you know, there are a couple different schools where the other school has surpassed, he used the word surpassed the flagship, and he said, and he had a love fest with SIUE, and he said, you know, wonderful things, and how are you dealing with that? And he asked the provost some questions, and I think you used the term equal partner, and I reiterated that. I mean, SIUE wants to be seen as an equal partner in the system. So that was a very common theme we heard. The other questions that you got from another representative, I believe, was, do you have the capacity to grow your programs? And how do you do those? And actually, there was several pointed questions about that. So I'd just like to point out that the legislator, they're thinking along the same lines. So we need, you know, and they're the ones giving us our funding. So it's important that we address this issue however we see fit, but it needs to be addressed. So I just wanted to point that out.
Question, and I think I spoke on this issue several meetings ago. When did this, and if you know, President Dunn, when did this allocation model begin? And what did SIU system do before the allocation model went into effect, which obviously we're not following? And then what do other universities with multiple campuses, how do they handle their budgeting, if you know?
That may be a good segue into how to think about what may happen from here. So Duane and I had talked about this, and we can't figure out when it started. I mean, it has been in place so long, possibly even to the point where the sub-budget started within the system, which would have been at what point Edwardsville became its own individually accredited campus and was no longer seen as a satellite of Carbondale. We know from one document that at least predates 1999, and we didn't go and try to research beyond that, but we know at least back to that period, and we suspect it was probably at what point the approach with sub-budget started once Edwardsville was a standalone campus. You see generally within systems, the 45 or so systems of the country, if there's not an appropriation to the individual campuses by the state, which in Illinois there's not, if you don't have an individual appropriation to the campus, then it tends to be formula driven. And that's probably what we're getting to as a potential discussion here. Have a formula-driven approach, and I'll come back and talk about that in a second, on kind of one end of the continuum, over to the other end of the continuum, being where the budgeting process is a central process. Now, this would be in a larger system that has a budget staff to do such work, wherein the entire allocation comes to the system, and then each of the campuses come forward and make the argument for their budgets as a whole. And then within the system or at the central level, you allocate out the state dollars. Typically in those schemes, you see the individual campuses getting to keep their tuition and fee money. So it's not the case that you pull centrally all the tuition and fee dollars and you know push out that 800 plus million. No, rather, everybody keeps tuition and fees locally generated, but then there's a central budgeting process for the state allocation. So all the way from formula to something like that, which would entail, you know, having a little bigger budget staff and a means by which everybody comes to make their pitch, and you do the determination that way. Now let me get the grace note on this formula piece. The deck from Edwardsville, which again is just a theoretical exercise, nobody's pitching any specific plan at this point, suggests enrollment would be the only driver, or you could use enrollment as the only driver. There are formulas that can take into account other things. One would think that the biggest percentage of a formula driver probably should be enrollment. I mean, that seems to make sense. And you could then weight based upon level. But you can also build other things into formulas. You can build in performance factors. You can build in incentives for all kinds of things if you wish. You can construct formulas to get anything done that you want, and I'm not advocating for this, and I, you know, we're a small system, so I don't want to get something that's drastically complicated. But it, a formula does not have to be enrollment only as far as the variable that pushes the money out. There are different ways to deal with that. You can look at the research enterprise as a whole and what you're having to pay for there, and build in some factor that pushes money out based upon any number of things. So you've got different approaches.
One item,
if I may.
Oh, I was just gonna, I think it'd be helpful for the board to get a better understanding of what the cost is to deliver education. Because if we're just looking at the revenue dollars coming in and not looking at the cost to deliver that education, I don't know that we're getting a complete understanding of why the formula may exist. It's my assumption that maybe it costs more to deliver that education in Carbondale because of the research enterprise and so forth. So if we're just looking at revenue dollars and not the cost to deliver that education, I think it would be helpful for us to understand as a board how that cost structure
That sort of begs the question, though, if you spend more, you get more. And I'm uncomfortable. It's almost penalizing someone who's more cost-effective, though, right?
No, what I'm saying is I think it benefits the board to understand, me included, how the cost structure in Carbondale and how that compares to Edwardsville to make sure that we're doing an apples-to-apples comparison. From a cost standpoint, I'm not talking from a student enrollment standpoint or growth, I'm saying for a cost standpoint.
Dr. Porter, do you?
Yes, do you have a proposed distribution?
So we would suggest looking at enrollment as a first step, and weighting the enrollment based on level of student. And so we're willing to start there with a formula.
So a certain amount for undergrad, then for master's, mm-hmm. then for...
Right, so looking at each of those, if you go through, we tried to reweight the headcount. And so if you look at fall of 18, based on what we've, you know, surmised, well, let's look at real numbers instead. If you look at the adjusted headcount, you know, we would be more like 51.1% of the appropriation, taking School of Medicine out of the picture, 51.1% going to Carbondale, 48.9% going to Edwardsville. If you go to the revenue, the projections, enrollment projections for fall, and again, fall of 18, it's hard to know where Carbondale will be. We can only go by what's been said publicly because we don't know your internal estimates. And then where we think we will be more 49.9% for Carbondale, 50.1% for Edwardsville. And again, that's using the adjusted, recognizing that there are different costs to graduate education. And I just can't help myself but to say, I do think it's important to recognize that if we're going to look at cost, there are things that are within our control to cost to address. And that when we're thinking about graduate education, there's often a large undergraduate population that helps support graduate education at many other Research One institutions. And so it's a complicated issue to think about what's the cost of a research enterprise and how can that be funded. So to your point, we're saying a first step is to look at the enrollment and to adjust based on the differences in our enrollment patterns. I apologize.
I'm just saying, I think this board should be, before making decisions on allocation choices, we should be able to understand how those complex issues, because I don't know that we fully do, me included. Or maybe everybody understands it except me, but I think it would be helpful to understand what is the cost difference and why does that exist and what can we do to be more efficient in Edwardsville and in Carbondale and School of Medicine. You know, what I think that makes sense for us to understand, and I don't know that we've gotten an accurate understanding or picture of that.
This is an initial foray into the discussion.
What I'm saying is that I think as we're pursuing this path, I think just not understanding enrollment growth, but understanding the cost, I think, is something that's really
important. I guess what I'm getting at is trying to figure out the next step. So we can
asking for is information.
Yeah, we can do, you know, the cost studies are out there. That's not, DHE does those. That's not real difficult to provide And then that, you know, if you want to use that as a jumping off point, but I think if, you know, at some juncture, you can't deny the enrollment issue anymore. That you being rhetorically all of us, the board needs.
I'm not denying anything.
No.
I'm asking for information. That's it. I think.
Joel, I understand. I think it's a matter, though.
And whether we have that conversation today or in future meetings, that's fine. I just think.
The enrollment is at a point where, you know, speaking of not taking 2 or 3 years to work on something, this is probably another one of those issues that's compelling, and there, you know, could be a possibility. We provide, if there's other information, let us know that. There are consultants, places to go for assistance in thinking about formulas too, and that may be an approach that's worthy of looking at as you move from here.
So is there, do you have an idea of how the medical school should be factored in? Do you have a proposal?
So we pulled the medical school out of the comparison.
And I actually think.
The percentage is summed to 100%.
Okay.
We just thought the medical school is a different.
I think one of the things in dealing with this is going to be taking it out of the equation, trying to figure out what's the appropriate approach for its share of the approach, getting it off the table, and then working from there with the remainder once they've had their fair share, so to speak.
Chancellor, I think you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I think there's several things that need to be addressed associated with this. First off is the current cost of operation, including the cost of our infrastructure. We have over $740 million deferred maintenance in Carbondale. And I believe the deferred maintenance in Edwardsville is probably just a little bit over $100 million. So the cost of maintaining and running the infrastructure is dramatically different. We are a 150-year-old campus with a lot more cost associated with operation. The second is unintended consequences. We, in the state of Ohio, the state provides state subsidy to universities based upon discipline specific, recognizing that different disciplines cost more to educate. So if you're a junior level course in, these numbers I'm making up, they're pretty accurate in terms of size. If you're a junior in chemical engineering, they'll pay $13,000 a year subsidy to subsidize a student in chemical engineering. Whereas if you're a junior in English composition or criminal justice, they may give $2,300. What ended up happening was that's how the state allocated the money in to the universities according to that formula. When it got to the universities, the presidents decided that they were going to put it all into a pile and average out to everyone, so everybody would get the same amount of money regardless. What ended up happening was that you had low-cost delivery programs growing dramatically, and the high-cost program, which are the fine arts, the technical programs, aviation programs, things like that, end up being squeezed out and drowned out. When you go to a fixed model like this, it doesn't take into account the cost of instruction associated with different majors, and that kind of level, it becomes very, very dangerous. You end up providing an economic advantage to low-cost, low-delivery programs, which may not be the intention of where you want your institution to go.
Do you have a suggestion
having been a president in Ohio under that system, it comes down to the willingness of senior leadership not to make those bad decisions.
I understand, but that doesn't always happen.
We're looking at what happens after it's the current set of players. But
yes.
So it's a formula driven by discipline, but once the money comes to you as a campus, you could use it however you wish. You didn't have to give the part driven by engineering all to engineering. You could use it to subsidize, if you'll say, other areas. And there's always going to be some element of that, but I get the point.
And that point has can have significant consequences in programs that are inherently are expensive to deliver. Music, fine art programs, which inherently are one-on-one type of exercise, don't lend themselves to scaling, get damaged very, very easily in that type of enterprise. The high technology programs, which require a lot of investment, get damaged very, very easily in that type of enterprise. And when you're looking at trying to generate enrollment and revenue along those lines, it becomes a challenge. So you were at Youngstown, so you know that this is a complex issue, and And if the leadership isn't willing to make sure that this is addressed appropriately, it can have some significant challenges in the long term.
But this goes into the managerial discretion element, which I'm actually not arguing. But there is ultimately, even under a highly formula-driven approach, you're going to have some level of management discretion. You're not going to award a college, even if it's pushing out, say, 30% of your state allocation. If the college isn't using the money well, if they're not making good decisions, if they're doing whatever, you should be using your management discretion to make judgments about that and deciding where you spend the money. I do agree with Carlo. I don't know of one campus in the state that took all of the money driven by a particular program and said to that college, it's all yours. I don't think any president there did it. But you're always going to have some management judgment in that. So you could do that same kind of thing if you want to centralize budgeting. The state of Illinois does not do that. I don't foresee that they will do that in my lifetime. So you could take on that same approach if you want to centralize budgeting at the system level and have the campuses work through the system on that kind of hybrid.
Gets back to Joel's question on delivery of the cost of delivery of services. For example, SIU Carbondale has an aviation program, nationally ranked aviation program. Hell, we just bought an airplane.
Three
airplanes, you know. And, you know, it's just...
But Provost, you want to say something?
It is complicated.
So, regardless of the proportion that goes to an individual campus, we are already in a position where programs cost different amounts. The instruction in music is more expensive, as Chancellor Montemagno pointed out. There's individualized time that faculty members spend with individual students for instruction. Engineering is more expensive than my home department of sociology. All those issues currently exist. As campus leaders, we're looking across programs already to see what the cost of instruction is, what the cost for startup. You know, a startup package for a chemist, a physicist, an engineer is very different than a startup package for a historian or a sociologist. So those things already exist. We're already making those decisions at the campus level, whether we're at 29% or 50% of the allocation model. Those are still management decisions that have to be made on individual campuses. I'm happy to share that. We're not saying this should be the model. We're saying this is the time to take up the conversation and to move forward on the issue. If there's more discussion, there's more discussion, right? This is not the only thing that needs to be discussed. We're asking you to take up the issue.
Well, and when you start, again, peeling back the layers, it can send you in all different directions. So the aviation example is a good one. One of the things we do there is to charge separate tuition. Those students pay flight fees at least within the aviation flight program, for the additional cost of the flight instruction. Well, then maybe that brings us to a discussion. We've done some of this, as more veteran trustees will recall, start doing differential tuition. If it's the case that engineering costs more to provide, engineering education costs more to provide, should we be differentiating tuition based upon cost studies by discipline of these programs, so that an engineering student pays somewhat more than, using the example, a humanities student or education student or whatever. We've done this in a couple of areas over the years here at SIU. Maybe that's part of the discussion too, so that it helps a campus that's invested in a higher percentage of delivery of those programs to help things out. And that's a whole other philosophical discussion. Then it's like the airline flights. Yes. You're sitting down to somebody, and what did you pay for the ticket? What did I pay for the ticket? And, you know, it's a huge amount of money different.
And the other issue associated with that is that it impacts also accessibility. And
absolutely.
Some of these
absolutely.
Programs which cost more usually have more prominent long-term income opportunities.
Absolutely.
And if you start charging differential tuition, it ends up maybe closing the door and having people select alternative
Absolutely.
Career paths that they want.
You've got to have aid to support, no
yeah.
doubt.
Sam?
Yeah, I think it would be foolish not to take into account enrollment, and maybe, but this next part, to echo Dr. Montevagno's notion of like unintended consequences, does it make sense to like construct a formula that takes into account like strategic maneuvers at stabilizing an unstable institution in the same fashion that like a parent might devote more time to a sick child than a healthy one?
We talked about performance.
Yeah, I mean, you can build in strategic elements if that's part of where the board would want to go with it. That gets complicated, and then, you know, to the point of unintended consequences, there can then become a gaming of the system that sometimes is does not lead to good outcomes. But there are formulas that can have a strategic piece in it. The debate then becomes what is it and how do you measure it?
So if we're going to get started on this, we should just go ahead and get started looking into the variables. And I wouldn't have any idea what kind of consultants there are out there. I'm sure you do.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we pick a consultant? And I would assume everybody on the board is at least willing to look
absolutely
into this.
Yeah, yes. I was going back to Joel's comment about, I mean, do you want to see some more data first? Or before we go to a potential, start looking for a potential group to help us on a formula discussion, or?
Yeah, I just want to get as much information as possible, and I kind of like, you know, duking it out a little bit and understanding we all care about the system. We all
right.
care about Edwardsville and Carbondale
Understood.
School of Medicine. But
can I
we
make
just
a
have to be able to get as much information as possible. That's,
can
that's
I make
all
a suggestion? And I get that. I'm with you. I don't disagree with that. That if we're going to hire, and I don't know what kind of consultant this would be, but if we're going to have someone work on a formula or help us come up with a procedure to do this, couldn't we be doing that and
at
cost at the same time? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, what I'm inclined to do is, and if you have the nature of information, one of the challenges always to figure out, okay, what's the information you want or what are trustees going to look for? Obviously, cost study data, absolutely top of the list. We might talk among ourselves as a group of campus leaders and with the system to try to figure out some of those other data pieces that could be helpful. If you guys have ideas, share those. And then parallel track, we might start looking at a consultant to assist. I've not reached out, haven't made any contact, but there's a group called NCHEMS, National Center for Higher Education Management Systems. They're out of Colorado. They don't cost a fortune. They do this type of work. I may do at least a preliminary call with them. They might lead me to others. AGB is a possibility. But we'll kind of explore that while we're then trying to get together some information.
Luke, do you want to make a comment?
Yeah, just a couple of things. Going back to the point about differentiated tuition costs, Dr. Cobb, correct me if I'm wrong, does that already exist in certain areas at Edwardsville?
Sure. School of Business has differential tuition
yes.
that the board passed last year. School
right.
of Engineering has differential tuition. We have a fee, a program fee in nursing, which is very much like differential tuition. School of Pharmacy has differential tuition. It's not called differential tuition, but they have a different
tuition. It's just that,
rate.
Yeah. As
it's just
all the professional schools have a separate
right.
Tuition
as
structure.
As does SDN.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted to clarify that point. And then once you highlight a point from President Dunn from earlier is that even the system office, looking back on all the books, can't find why this was ever started in the first place. So I think that we can all agree that that's an issue. We need to start with the why and consider why is this the way that we go? Why don't we go a different way? So I think that looking at these numbers in front of us, none of us know the answer for the formula right now. But I think that we can all agree that there's a problem here.
Before leaving the topic too, in your materials, I had attached a couple of other pieces and not looking for necessarily direction or no decisions today, obviously. But it had to do with how we budget at the system level, to Luke's point. And it was just a memo that you noticed there from Dwayne that had come to me and a couple of others thinking about how we approach that, not looking for action, decision. If it sparks discussion, that's fine. Had a chance to talk with Marcia just a little bit about it. But wanted it there for you to see, think about. If it warrants maybe some further discussion, obviously, at the April meeting or subsequently we can do that, as well as thinking about our authority levels for expenditures. And that was a separate issue that had arisen from the campuses in the fall. I told Duane, let's just keep it on hold until we have a retreat. I'm, again, not looking for a decision today, but that memo was shared with you. That may be something we come back with later as well, but trying to at least get it in front of you, let you start thinking about it. The expenditure authority is reflective of what U of I does. Doesn't mean we have to follow it, and it doesn't mean it's drastically difficult to do what we're doing now and stay at that level. Sometimes it can slow down expenditures, but you know, with planning, that hasn't hung us up. I don't think in any great way. But I want to make reference to those pieces as we go forward. And on the system-wide budget, that may be something that if there's a willingness after some further discussion to go there, we would just incorporate that once we start doing the FY19 budget. The expenditure authority stuff, we'd come to that and get obviously a board approval on that. Nothing on it today. You'll see it come back. We can talk about it more as questions arise.
Can I just ask one follow-up question? Because that the notion of deferred maintenance, that's a chronic issue at Carbondale, has been for a generation, I think, of peeling paint and. I mean, it's as Dr. Montemagno says, it's an old campus, and I've been aware for years, antedating everyone else's presence except maybe Phil's, that's an issue. So my question, I guess, is is there room in this formula creation to deal with, and they're not really intangibles, because obviously we know what the numbers are going to be to get the campus tuned back up. So there's room in there for that sort of
thing. Yeah, you can do some sort of, I'm just trying to think how this has been done. You can do some sort of facility index or something that you use it to drive a certain percentage.
And to that point, one of the other questions, or one of the representatives spoke, I think to you actually, it was because when you said 750 million.
Oh yeah, Representative Phillips.
Well, he really hammered, he was shocked.
He didn't believe.
I
don't think he believed us.
He wants a list of every conceivable project. So
we've got it. We had it by
so,
the end of the afternoon.
And he was somewhat shocked by the amount of deferred maintenance and improvement. So there clearly is a need there. I mean, no one's suggesting that isn't a component because of the age.
Is there any stomach in Springfield for another capital?
Would be nice.
There will be eventually. I think.
Which in the past we've been able to use.
But do understand that capital, for the most part, has been driven by new construction or large scale renovation, which we can use. But to that point, we have huge deferred maintenance that typically has very little that's coming to us in terms of approach out of the capital bill on a year-to-year basis. So for instance, I think in the capital proposal for that purpose, the allocation is only $33 million per campus. I mean, $33 million out of over $750, right? So it's a drop in the bucket. Not to spin out of control on this, because I know we're ready for it. Comfort rate, but
yeah.
a lot of these, but a huge part of the issue.
I have a catheter in my
A big part of the issue, though, is the fact that we've got facilities, as the chancellor knows, that just need to come down. They need to disappear. We need to get a lot of scrubbing off that list just on that basis. But that capital bill is not going to. I'm speaking general, very general terms. That capital bill is not going to solve that.
That's not going to save us. So we want to take a 5-minute recess and we'll come back then. All right, let's recess. Thank you.